Hell, we just made it to podcast episode number 50. Actually, it's just me by myself. I don't usually have anybody on my podcast unless I want to do like an interview thing. But the other day, I was working Sunday at my job, Meijer, to make a little extra money. I was asked I was supposed to I was scheduled to work 3:30 to 10:30, and about 9 o'clock came after I came back from lunch. I had kind of a late lunch break. And my one of the workers in the store asked me if I was willing to stay over, and I stayed an hour over my shift just to get stuff done, and I didn't get out of work on Sunday until like 11:30. I'm like, well, I need the money, so it's more money in my paycheck for next week, so that's how I look at it. But other than that, I started a new book, Magnus Chase. The Ship of the Dead is the name of the book, and it's the third book in the Magnus Chase series, so that will be the third and final book for that series. Then I move on to The Trials of Apollo and any other book that I have in my room that I need to finish reading. I do have I if you're in also I was watching a movie yesterday, so if you're into horror films, there was one I was watching yesterday called Open 24 Hours. I do not own the movie personally. I watched it off my Roku stick, in the Vudu app. And there was about a girl who works at a 24-hour gas station. And basically she was supposed to work there because of she needed a job. She was getting out of prison. And then it states in the movie that she lit her boyfriend on fire, which is why she was in prison in the first place. And then, so that was the movie that was so that was the movie I was watching yesterday. But Vudu has like over 7,000 movies to choose from, so you can entertain yourself throughout the whole damn year just watching different movies. I'm excited for baseball season to be coming up. I know within the next few weeks or something like that, baseball season will start. And I'll be happy once that starts. Let's see what else we got here. We're still talking about vacation ideas for me because I've been at Meijer for a year now. Now I get vacation time. I think it's like 5 or 6 days that I'm awarded. Since that's in, I haven't really decided where I want to go yet, but me and my mom were talking about it, and my brother and my sister. We're more than likely talking about going to Brookfield Zoo, or mostly Brookfield Zoo because it's a bigger and it's a bigger landmark. It's a bigger landmark of a zoo for the Chicago area. So we're hoping with that we could probably take that trip by next year, if not this year. Also, because I've hit the 1 year mark at Meijer, they just started contributing to my 401k, so that's going to build up a lot faster. And I'm so far I have not touched my money in the 401k, and I have no intentions to. The whole point is to keep that building up. Yeah, I was reading this story. I'm surprised this bitch even survived. Let's see here. There was something about a woman that was impaled by a tree, and she had seven broken ribs, the husband said. In Portland, Maine, a Maine passenger was impaled when a falling was she was impaled when a falling pine tree struck the vehicle, and she was riding and suffered, and she suffered seven broken ribs. So she's getting better day by day, her husband said Friday. Teresa Roy, who's 79, has a long recovery ahead, said her husband David Roy. But he said he's just happy that they're alive after the bizarre incident that destroyed their vehicle and injured both of them. Basically, I feel like we have the guardian angel. I doubt that. But David Roy said that he and his wife were driving home to Oakland on a two-lane road because their vehicle had been buffeted by strong winds earlier on the I-95 during a powerful windstorm. The crash in Sydney happened in an instant when a pine tree blown down by the high wind struck his vehicle as he drove at 55 miles per hour, with limbs crashing through the windshield as he struggled to control the vehicle. A large limb came through the center dashboard and windshield at an angle, hitting him and then striking his wife's armpit while another broke the windshield and impaled her shoulder. The Sydney Fire and Rescue used the jaws of life to reach Teresa Roy and then cut the tree limb with the handsaw so that she could be taken to the Maine General Hospital in Augusta. She remained in fair condition on Friday, at the hospital's spokesperson said. Roy said that he had been moved by the outpouring of support, and he's glad that his scrappy wife is improving. She is one step at a time and doing good and getting better, he said. But the storm wreaked havoc across the region, knocking out power to more than 130,000 homes and businesses in New England and New York. A gust of a 71-mile-per-hour wind was recorded in Maine that day. Yeah, I wouldn't have been out that particular day if that was going to happen. Fuck me. There's been wave of retirement signals battles ahead for Republicans. This is not the way the Republicans wanted to begin the year, but Missouri's Roy Blunt on Monday became the fifth Republican senator to announce that he would not run for re-election. A retirement wave that portends an ugly campaign season next year and gives Democrats fresh hope in preserving their razor-thin Senate majority. History suggests that Republicans are still well positioned to reclaim at least one chamber of Congress next year, but officials on both parties agree that the surge of GOP departures will make the Republicans' challenge more difficult in the Senate. Anytime you lose an incumbent, it's bad news, said Republican strategist Rick Tyler, who briefly worked for a failed Missouri Senate candidate Todd Akin nearly a decade ago. Missouri is not necessarily a safe state for Republicans. Democrats have won there. The 71-year-old Blunt ex Blunt's exit is a reminder of how the nation's politics have shifted since the rise of Donald Trump. Blunt and his retiring GOP colleagues from Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Alabama represent an old guard who fought for conservative policies, but sometimes they resisted the deeply personal attacks and uneven governance that dominated the Trump era. Their departures will leave a void, likely to be filled by a new generation of Republicans that are more willing to embrace Trumpism or by Democrats. Several Missouri Republicans are expected to seek the nomination to replace Blunt, but none will be more divisive than the former governor, Eric Greitens, who had resigned in 2018 amid the fallout of a sex scandal and ethics investigation. Missouri's Republican base has since rallied behind him, believing that he was unfairly prosecuted, but Greitens was considered running for the 2000, for the I'm sorry for the GOP nomination even before Blunt's announcement. He's expected to announce his candidacy as soon as Tuesday morning, but the two leading Democrats are with their former Senator Claire McCaskill and 2016 Senate candidate Jason Kander, both said that they would not run for the open seat. Ahead of Gretchen's announcement, some Republicans worried that he could jeopardize the Senate seat if he emerges as the party's nominee. But Stephen Law, who's a key ally of the Senate Minority Leader Moscow Mitch and CEO of the Senate Leadership Fund, had warned that Republicans may be beginning to repeat the mistakes of 2010 when the GOP lost the Senate majority by embracing the flawed far-right candidates. We have an opportunity to win back a majority, Law said, but in 2010, that opportunity was lost on the Senate side because of unelectable candidates who got nominated. But back in 2010, Tea Party favorite Christine O'Donnell had beat a longtime GOP congresswoman in the Delaware Senate primary before losing by a landslide in the general election following reports of personal financial difficulties and questionable use of campaign funds and allegations that she had been dabbed into witchcraft. 2 years later in Indiana, Richard Murdoch defeated six-term Senator Richard Lugar in the 2012 GOP primary, but he imploded after a debate in which he said pregnancy resulting from rape is something that God intended, not really. But in Missouri, Republican nominee Aiken lost after he insisted on a local talk show that women's bodies have ways to avoid pregnancy and cases of legitimate rape. Yeah, he was a piece of shit, yeah. In the decades since Aker's debacle, Missouri's politics, like the nation's, have evolved in a way that gives both parties opportunities. States like Missouri, Ohio, and Iowa recently considered swing states are trending away from Democrats. But at the same time, previous red states like North Carolina and Georgia are trending away from Republicans. Missouri hasn't elected a Democratic senator since McCaskill beat Aiken in 2012. Trump carried that state last November by 15 percentage points, but Trump carried Ohio, where Republican Senator Rob Portman will not seek re-election next year, by 8%. The former squatter won by the same margin in Iowa, where 87-year-old Republican Senator Chuck Grassley is considering retiring. Democrats are expected to be more competitive in North Carolina, where Trump eked out a victory by just 1%. And in Wisconsin, should Republican Senator Ron Johnson follow through with the campaign promise not to seek more than two terms, Democrats have not lost any incumbents to retirement, but they are defending the vulnerable incumbents in Georgia and Arizona, among others. They have no margin for error, but Republicans will claim the Senate majority for the last 2 years of President Joe Biden's term if they pick up even one additional seat next November. The party that occupies the White House traditionally suffers significant losses in the first midterm election of a new president. But President Barack Obama's Democratic Party, for example, lost 63 seats in the House and 6 in the Senate in 2010. But Democrats are hopeful that Trump will become an unwitting ally in 2022. The former Republican squatter has vowed to play an active role in the midterms, particularly by supporting pro-Trump candidates in primary elections. Yet leaves little room for well-established Republicans like Blunt, who are popular statewide. The challenge for Republicans will be the race to the bottom in the Republican primary, said Morgan Jackson, who's a leading Democratic strategist based in North Carolina. It's not about what you say. It's about how loud and angry you fucking are. But that's a very different view of the world. But Jackson said it's a safe net that Republicans will win the House majority, but he's optimistic that Trump meddling in Senate primaries will help limit Democrat losses. And maybe it won't be a good cycle, but maybe it won't be a bad cycle either. J.B. Porsche, who leads the Democratic allied Senate majority PAC, had noted that the Republicans are forced on the nation's culture wars while Democrats are in the process of sending billions of dollars to working-class Americans that are affected by this pandemic, and that contrast will help Democrats, he said. But there is a working family economic argument that Democrats can still make in the middle of the country in places like Missouri and Ohio, and it keeps them competitive. Meanwhile, Blunt predicted political success for Republicans in Missouri and beyond during a Monday news conference. He also reflected upon the 2010 election, when Democrats were punished nationwide after embracing Obama's fiscal stimulus and healthcare overhaul. I think 2022 will be a great year in the country, and I think it will be the fine year in the Senate race, Blunt told reporters, but the Republican Party would not be fine. Oh, yeah, I just reached season 4, disc 2 of House, so I'm not, got that on pause anyway for right now. And then I work at Meijer again later on tonight from 4 to 10:30. It's a short shift, but either way, it doesn't bother me. Oh, check in here. Let's see what we got here, and any just anything. What I'm waiting for is that they're making a new Mortal Kombat movie, and everybody in my job is talking about wanting to see it, and I'm one of them. But the only problem is it's not going to be the same person in the movie. Robin Chu, who played Liu Kang in the original, won't be in this one. That defeats the purpose because he was Liu Kang. Now they're gonna have somebody different. The guy that played Raiden in the first movie, it was actually two different people in both, so they're gonna have a different person playing him in this one too. So they're gonna have three different people play Raiden. James Remar, I think, was in the second one playing him. Then you had Christopher Lambert in the first one. Now I'm not sure who's in this one exactly. And it's been so fucking hot out here too. Yesterday I was working in 65 degree weather. Now it's like 62 degrees outside, so it's been getting fucking hot the last couple of days. I'm still hesitant to get my coronavirus shot because I don't trust it. I don't like needles anyway, so fuck those needles. Gotta see what this one's about. In the United Kingdom, an astonishingly rare fireball meteorite was found in a UK driveway. Scientists have sent daring missions out into the wilds of space to grab some asteroid bits, but here's looking at you, Hayabusa 2 and the OSIRIS-REx. After an eye-popping fireball meteor had blasted across the UK on February 28, scientists have recovered some of the valuable fragments it scattered on the ground. For the first time in 30 years, a meteorite has been recovered in the UK after landing in the driveway of a house in Gloucestershire. The Natural History Museum in London said in a statement Tuesday that the museum called the carbonaceous chondrite meteorite astonishingly rare and said it would give scientists a glimpse into the early solar system dating back 4.6 billion years ago. Since the dark, fragile rock landed in the town of Winchcombe, sorry, it's already becoming known as the Winchcombe meteorite. According to the museum, carbonaceous chondrite meteorites are made of a mixture of minerals and organic compounds, including the blocks of life itself, amino acids. The rare meteorite had left the Natural History Museum researcher Russell speechless with excitement. It was nearly 10.6 ounces, which is 300 grams of the space rock, had been recovered on the ground so far, giving scientists a tremendous amount of material to study. Russell said the fragments look like material collected by the Hayabusa 2 and OSIRIS space missions. The UK Meteor Observation Network, a citizen science group that tracks meteor sightings, captured the fireball event on camera and helped to narrow down the potential debris field and the likely origin of the meteorite, which traces back to the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. And this is history in the making, said the UK Meteor Observation Network in a statement. The recovery of a meteorite fragment with data from a meteor camera networks is the first for the UK. But the quick recovery and excellent preservation of the meteorite means scientists have a pristine example to study that will connect with research on an asteroid material return from space, said Russell. It is absolutely a dream come true. Yeah, they're still going on about that COVID relief thing. I know that it's been passed, but now it's gotta wait for Biden to, now Biden's gotta wait for it to be signed off. For the dumbass senators who voted against the $15 minimum wage, they represent 3/4 of the workers who would benefit, Stodi says. A new report from the Economic Policy Institute looks at who would benefit from a $15 an hour minimum wage. It found that 24 million of the workers who would are in states where senators voted against it. The wage hike hasn't included the stimulus package that the 7 Democrats voted against it. Of the 32 million workers who would receive a raise under a $15 an hour minimum wage, 24 million are in states where senators voted against it, according to a new report from the left-leaning Economic Policy Institute, also known as EPI. That works out to 75% of all the workers who would benefit from a higher federal minimum wage. The 32 million workers who would be impacted represent 21% of the overall workforce, according to the report. Senator Bernie Sanders pushed to include a provision for raising the minimum wage to 15 by 2025 was voted down on Friday. 7 Democrats, including the moderates, which are basically they're not Democrats, but they're probably more than likely Republicans, are Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Or Kyrsten Sinema. They joined Republicans in voting down the measure. Also voting against it was an independent named August May, Angus Maine of May, Angus King of Maine, who caucuses with the Democrats. The EPI report found that increasing the minimum wage to 15 by 2025 would benefit America's essential and frontline workers, but it would be a wage hike for 19 million of them. Around 60% of all workers would be impacted. As then Senators Grace Dean previously reported. Or actually, as insiders Grace Dean previously reported, almost a third of the black workers were given a raise under the policy. But EPI also found that 26% of the Hispanic workers would benefit from the bump too. At a $15 an hour minimum wage has broad support. In an insider poll, over 60% of the respondents said that they would definitely or probably support a $15 an hour minimum wage. I support it. The respondents were now more split on when an increase should come into effect. 39% said that. Where the increase to go into effect, a $15 an hour minimum wage should be implemented immediately, and conversely, a 50% would prefer a phased rollout, gradually raising the minimum wage annually to 15 in 2025. But Sanders's Raise the Wage Act would have raised the federal minimum wage to 15 by 2025. Even that schedule wasn't quick enough for some minimum wage workers. But Cynthia Murray, who's a Walmart associate and a member of United for Respect, testified at a Senate Budget Committee hearing on the proposed increase. We've been talking about this issue for years and not just a couple of years, Murray told Insider after her testimony. That's what I'm saying. When is the time going to come? 2025 is too late for me. As I see it, it has to be right now. And overall, the EPI report finds that the $15 increase by 2025 would have resulted in an annual pay increase of $3,300 for those working year round, like me. So it says here that the House is expected to vote Wednesday on the COVID-19 package. That's tomorrow. Hopefully they get it done. Let's see what the hell Donald Trump is fighting Republicans on. While Donald Trump has long championed himself as a master real estate tycoon, which he really isn't, talk to anyone familiar with how he built his fortune, and they will tell you that the key to his success wasn't buying buildings. It was putting his name on the buildings, literally to a variety of buildings, reality TV shows, and other ventures that wanted to benefit from being associated with the brand that for many Americans exuded over-the-top opulence. Ultimately, Trump has been more successful playing a business mogul than being one in real life, wrote the New York Times in September 2020, after a detailed examination of 15 years of the former squatter's tax returns. The Apprentice, along with the licensing and endorsement deals that flowed from his expanding celebrity, brought Trump a total of $427 million, the Times analyst of the records found. And the Times added that most of Trump's core enterprises, from his constellation of golf courses to a conservative magnate hotel in Washington, they reported losing millions of dollars, if not tens of millions of dollars, year after year, while his revenue from The Apprentice and from licensing deals is drying up. And several years ago, he sold nearly all of the stocks that now might have helped him plug holes in his struggling properties. Which brings to the current fight, the fight playing out publicly between the former squatter and the Republican Party apparatus, a fight centered on, you guessed it, whether the party organization can use Trump's image and name to help it raise money. Last Friday, Trump's lawyers sent out a cease and desist letter to the Republican National Committee, as well as the House and Senate campaign committees, insisting that they stop using his name, image, and our likeness in all fundraising, persuasion, and our issue or in our issue speech. The RNC pushed back on Monday, sending a letter of their own to Trump's lawyer, insisting that the RNC has every right to refer to public figures as it engages in core, the First Amendment protected political speech, and it will continue to do so in pursuit of these common goals. Trump, of course, had responded to that response via a statement released by his Save America group. Yeah, but he really didn't save America; he destroyed it. No more money for rhinos, which stands for Republicans in names only, wrote Trump, referring to a derogatory term for GOP viewers viewed as insufficiently loyal to core principles. They do nothing but hurt the Republican Party, which is what you did, and a great voting base. They would never lead us to greatness, and you didn't. Send your donation to Save America PAC at DonaldTrump.com. You didn't save America, you fucking destroyed it. That echoes a pitch that was made by the former squatter during a speech late last month at the Conservative Political Action Conference. There's only one way to contribute to our efforts to elect America First, Republican conservatives, and so basically he's begging these people to donate money to him, which I would never do, because I'm not a fucking idiot. Yep. That's really what he's arguing about. He's arguing about people using his name over certain things. The odd thing was, I was reading this online the other day. Now, out here, if you work in a fast food restaurant like McDonald's, they only pay you like $8 an hour at most. But I was reading online that if you lived in Denmark, they starting pay for a McDonald's worker in Denmark is $23 an hour. I'm like, which is a fucking ripoff. And not just that, I worked for McDonald's out in Indiana. It sucked. I'm no longer there, good thing. But when I had worked for McDonald's for that 1 year, that I was there, you only had one break, which is your 30-minute lunch, but they had no benefits. The only benefit they had was that you would get 50% off your meal when you go on lunch break, and not just that, you would also they would give you no vacation time. There was no 401k, no paid vacation, no nothing. But the McDonald's overseas in Denmark, they offer 6 weeks of vacation time. You have excellent health benefits, and you have a 401k out there, but not out here. I said, if they're willing to do that out there, then the McDonald's out in the United States should be able to do that same shit too. It's just their way of not wanting to pay out any more than they have to. I'll close that one out there for a minute. I'm looking for something else here. Oh yeah, this one I forgot about. There was Carla Walenda. She was the she was part of the Flynn Walenda. She was a member of the Flynn Walenda family. She just died, and they were the ones that were known for doing those high flying trapeze acts where they would walk on ropes. That is something I can never do, but she did it, and she was 85 years old. Yeah, she was part of the Ringling Brothers Circus where they would do that shit. Yeah, it says in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, it says Carla Walenda, who's a member of the Flying Walendas, high wire act and the last surviving child of the famed troupe's founder, has died at the age of 85. Her son, Carla's son Rick, had said on social media that she died Saturday in Sarasota, Florida, of natural causes. She was the daughter of Carl Walenda, who had founded the troupe in Germany before moving to the United States in 1928 to great acclaim. She was also the aunt of the aerialist Nick Walenda. Carla Walenda was born on February 13, 1936, and appeared in a newsreel in 1939 as she learned how to walk the wire with her father and mother, Maddie, looking on. But she said the first time on the wire was much earlier. She said that at about 6 weeks old, they carried her across the wire. She said in a 2017 interview with the Sarasota TV station. Her father had rode the bicycle, and the mother sat on his shoulders, holding me and introducing me to the public. She spent her young years traveling the country as her father's troupe performed in the Ringling Brothers Circus, and she had a brother, Mario, and a sister, Jenny, who all performed in the act. She began appearing in the family show in 1947, but not in the high wire at first. According to her biography and the family's website, in 1951, her father told her she could join the high wire act if she could pull off a headstand on top of the family's seven-person pyramid, and she was able to join the high wire act later that year. Carla Walenda had left the family act in 1961 to form her own troupe, but the next season, two of the Walendas were killed in an accident while performing the pyramid, and her brother ended up being paralyzed from it. Walenda had rejoined the family troupe in 1965, replacing an aunt who died doing a solo act. Her husband, Richard Guzman, died in 1972 when he fell 60 feet to his death during a performance in West Virginia. Her father had died in 1978, falling while walking a wire across and across the street in Puerto Rico. Still, she would not be deterred from performing. Basically, accidents can happen at any time, any place, she told the Sarasota Herald Tribune in 2014. Well, we have to make a living, and this is the only way I know or want to do. I've done waitress work, and I've hated every minute of it. And why should I go and do a job that I hate? She worked until her 70s, including that in the Miley Cyrus music video. She finally retired in 2017 at the age of 81, after appearing on a Steve Harvey TV show, special, doing a headstand atop an 80-foot sway pole. She says, when I am out there, all of my pain and all that goes away and I am in a world of my own, she said in the 2017 interview. She is survived by her son, two daughters, which are Rietta, Wolanda Jordan, and Valerie Wolanda, and 16 grandchildren. Her a second son that she had, Mario, died in 1983. We also have a rapper that was killed the other day. Now I don't know who the rapper was because I'm not familiar with his name. So that means I'm gonna have to look up his name anyway and listen to anything I can find on him. In Atlanta, Georgia, a shooting on Interstate 85 in a suburban Atlanta town, has claimed the life of a rising Texas rap artist. One of three Interstate shootings in the metro area in 2 days, authorities said Saturday. A rapper by the name of Corey DeTeage, but he performed under the name Chucky Trill, had died at an area hospital after Friday's pre-dawn shooting, police in a suburban Gwinnett County said. The police corporal, Colin Flynn, a department spokesperson, said someone pulled up beside DeTeage's car and opened fire around 3 a.m. That's pretty early for a fucking shootout, but, you know. And Dietich was from Sugar Land, Texas. Flynn said that suspect fled and a motive in the slaying was unknown, but police gave no immediate description of the suspect's vehicle and have made no arrest yet because they don't have any, you know. On Saturday, a man who was grazed by a bullet on the I-285 in DeKalb County when another driver pulled up alongside him and opened fire. But officers were also called to a gas station about 4 a.m. after the man who was in his 40s pulled over and called 911. It appears that the victim was traveling down 285 when an unknown vehicle pulled up next to him and fired several rounds into the victim's car. Wells said in an emailed statement to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, it's unclear what prompted this shooting. The man was taken to the hospital and is expected to recover. About an hour after Dietrich was killed Friday, someone shot a driver in the head on Interstate 75. Authorities said that man remains hospitalized, but a witness told police that the shot was fired after two cars tried to occupy the same lane, and that particular shooter fled also, but there have been at least four earlier incidents on the area interstates already this year. The rapper Bun B was among several artists who expressed condolences on social media after the death of the rapper Chucky Trill. Bun B said that this was a good man, humble, he was hardworking, loyal, determined, and focused, and he had the talent. Queen saw him and told Bonafide, that boy is good. If he don't have a manager, you should do it. And he did. He put everything he had into it. And we are heartbroken this morning and send our deepest condolences to D, Bone, and all of his family, the friends and supporters. Buy or stream his music and let's keep his memory alive. Chucky Trill was managed by Bone of Bonafide Entertainment, who also manages Bun B. The shootings came ahead of the NBA All-Star Game Sunday in Atlanta, but Flynn could not confirm whether Chucky Trill was in Atlanta for that particular game. Chucky Trill had released his album, Music for the Soul, in 2018 and had more music in the works. The Houston Chronicle reported police said that the recent trend of interstate shootings in Atlanta is very concerning, and not only can the person lose control of their car after being shot or injured by a gunshot, but also if you're shooting from a moving vehicle and there's other moving vehicles around, you could be shot yourself, Flynn said. That's the only bad thing. Yep. There's nothing on that one out of these. Oh yeah, this guy's gonna be in trouble for doing this. Last story in, and then I gotta get ready for other stuff. A longtime Amtrak employee in New Jersey stole several dozen chainsaws and hundreds of parts from the railroad, and he sold them online, according to a federal criminal complaint that was released Tuesday. Jose Rodriguez had sold the items for more than $50,000 between 2016 and July of 2020, according to the complaint. The 48-year-old Brick resident has worked at Amtrak's North Brunswick facility since 2007 in positions including senior engineer and repairman. Rodriguez was scheduled to appear in court on Tuesday afternoon. A message that was left with Amtrak and with an attorney for Rodriguez seeking comment. The sales were primarily made through an online auction site, though some of the saws were sold directly to people, the complaint alleged. A buyer in Pennsylvania provided law enforcement agents with 11 boxes with Rodriguez's return address that had been used to ship chainsaws in exchange for more than $7,000. In all, Rodriguez had sold 77 chainsaws, 103 chainsaw replacement bars, and 163 replacement chains to buyers in Pennsylvania, Michigan, West Virginia, Ohio, Illinois, California, and South Carolina, according to the complaint. He faces one count of stealing government property and one count of stealing from an agency receiving federal funds, and both counts carry a maximum prison sentence of 10 years if he's found guilty. More than likely, he will be. I think that should be all of it for today. If there's any more stories to get to in the next week, I will get to them. It's hard to get to every damn story within a day because there's so much coming through.